Welcome back. You know, we've been diving deep into the story of David and King Saul.
Yeah.
And today we're looking at some really pivotal moments for both of them.
Yeah, this is a section full of intrigue, narrow escapes, even some really thought-provoking parallels to earlier events in the Bible.
Yes. Let's start with David's situation among the Philistines. Last we left him, he was playing a very dangerous game, pretending to be loyal to King Achish.
Right.
And what's so fascinating here is how completely Achish trusts him.
Oh, absolutely. So much so that he wants David to fight alongside the Philistines against Israel.
Yeah.
It's incredible, a man known for his victories against the Philistines
right now
being asked to fight for them.
Yeah, it really begs the question, was David ever actually going to go through with this? Would he actually raise his sword against his own people?
Yeah, that's, the text leaves it open to interpretation. On the one hand, it seems like David is really committed to this deception. But there's also this sense that he's walking a tightrope, and any wrong step could just send him plummeting.
Absolutely. And the other Philistine commanders weren't buying it at all, were they?
Not at all, no. They saw right through David's act. They remembered his reputation, the warrior who single-handedly took down Goliath, who'd been a thorn in their side for years.
Right.
They feared he would turn on them in the heat of battle.
They even brought up that popular song that everyone was singing.
Right.
About David's victories. Saul has slain his thousands and David his tens of thousands. It's almost comical. They're terrified of their own propaganda.
It really is. It's a testament to David's prowess as a warrior, but also to the power of fear and suspicion.
Yeah.
And you're right. The fact that the song exists in the story, it adds another layer to the narrative.
Yeah.
It's a reminder of David's past exploits and the shadow they cast over his present situation.
So David's almost trapped by his own success.
Yeah.
But then, in a twist of fate, the very commanders who doubt him end up giving him a way out.
Exactly. They force Achish to send David away.
Right.
It's a remarkable escape, orchestrated by the people who suspected him the most.
It really is.
You could say David's deception worked too well.
What I find interesting is David's reaction when Achish tells him he has to leave.
Right.
He protests. He seems genuinely disappointed. Was he just trying to keep up appearances, or did he have some other motive?
It's one of the most intriguing aspects of this story.
Yeah.
The text really doesn't give us a clear answer,
right, and
it really invites us to consider the complexities of David's character.
Yeah.
Was he truly loyal to Achish? Did he see this as an opportunity to actually strike a blow against Saul?
Right.
Or was it simply a matter of survival, of playing the game until he could find a better position?
It's a reminder that even biblical heroes are complicated figures. They have their own motivations and ambitions.
Right.
Speaking of complicated, this whole episode takes place against the backdrop of a very significant location, Aphek.
Yeah.
Why does that name stand out to you?
Well, Aphek is the same place where the Israelites suffered a crushing defeat back in the days of Eli the priest.
Mm-hmm.
That's when they lost the Ark of the Covenant.
Right.
A symbol of God's presence and power.
Yeah.
It's a very dark chapter in Israel's history, and the author intentionally draws a parallel between that event and the situation with Saul.
So by choosing Aphek as the setting, the author is foreshadowing a similar downfall for Saul.
Precisely.
Wow.
It's a literary technique known as narrative typology.
Okay.
It's like the author saying, pay attention, folks. History might be about to repeat itself.
Right.
But instead of the Ark of the Covenant being at stake, it's the kingship itself.
And just as Eli was rejected as priest, Saul has been rejected as king.
Right.
It's a chilling reminder that even the most powerful figures can fall from grace.
Absolutely. And it sets the stage for what happens next.
Yeah.
David returns to Ziklag, expecting to find his home and family safe, but instead,
he finds utter devastation.
Mm.
The Amalekites had raided Ziklag, burned everything, and taken the women and children captive.
Oh, wow.
It's a really gut-wrenching scene. The text says, David and his men wept until they had no strength left.
Just imagine that emotional turmoil. They've just escaped this incredibly dangerous situation with the Philistines, only to return to this utter devastation.
Yeah, it's a test of faith, unlike anything David has faced before.
Absolutely.
And what's so interesting is that unlike Saul, who we saw spiraling into despair and isolation,
right,
David turns to God for guidance.
Yeah.
He asks Abiathar, the priest, to bring the ephod.
The ephod. That was a sacred garment worn by the priests.
Right.
And it was used for divination, seeking God's will.
Right.
It shows that even in this moment of crisis, David is still relying on divine guidance.
Right.
He doesn't let his grief or anger cloud his judgment.
Which is such a powerful contrast to Saul, who had essentially cut himself off from God's guidance.
Exactly.
And what's striking is that God responds to David.
He does.
He assures David of victory and tells him to pursue the Amalekites.
It's a pivotal moment. It would have been so easy for David to just give in to despair,
right,
to blame himself or others for what happened.
Yeah.
But instead, he chooses to act,
right,
to fight for his people and their families.
So David gathers 400 of his men. The other 200 were just too exhausted from the journey.
Right.
And they set off in pursuit.
Yeah.
They eventually find the Amalekites, but not in a battle formation.
Oh, no.
They're celebrating their victory completely off guard.
Oh, wow. Drunk and feasting on the spoils of their raid.
Right.
They never expected David and his men to catch up to them.
It's a complete reversal of fortune.
Yeah.
David and his men launch this surprise attack, and they win a decisive victory. They recover everything that was stolen, the women, the children, all the livestock, all the plunder. It's incredible.
It's a moment of pure triumph, but it's followed by a conflict that reveals a lot about David's leadership.
Oh.
Some of the men who participated in the attack want to deny a share of the spoils to the 200 men who stayed behind because they were too exhausted.
That doesn't seem very fair.
Right.
They may not have fought, but they were still part of the company.
Of course.
It would be like punishing them for their physical limitations.
Exactly. And David recognizes this.
Yeah.
He steps in and prevents what could have been a very divisive and damaging fight among his own men.
Wow.
He reminds them, the Lord has given us this victory. It belongs to all of us.
He's establishing such a powerful precedent there.
He is.
That everyone shares in the spoils of victory, regardless of their role in the battle.
Absolutely. It speaks volumes about his understanding of leadership.
Yeah.
It's not just about personal glory or rewarding those who fought the hardest. It's about unity.
Right.
About recognizing that everyone contributes to the success of the group.
And then David does something really interesting.
What's that?
He sends a portion of the spoils to the elders of Judah.
His own tribe.
Yes.
The people he will eventually rule.
Right.
This seemingly small act, it reveals David's political savvy.
Yeah.
He's been away from Judah for a long time, living as an outlaw. This gesture is a way of reconnecting, of reminding the elders that he hasn't forgotten them.
He's laying the groundwork for his eventual return.
Exactly. It's a brilliant strategic move.
It really is.
He's building alliances, demonstrating his generosity, and showing that he's still connected to his roots.
Yeah.
It's a subtle but powerful display of leadership that goes beyond just military victories.
This whole sequence of events is just such a roller coaster.
It is.
We see David, at his most vulnerable, weeping over the loss of his family and community.
Right.
And yet he rises to the challenge, relying on his faith and his strategic mind to not only achieve victory, but to solidify his position as a future leader.
It really underscores the complexities of his character.
Yes.
He's a skilled warrior, a devout man of faith, and a shrewd political operator.
Right.
All of these qualities will be essential as he navigates the path towards becoming king.
So after all of this, what kind of king do you think these experiences are shaping David to be?
That's the big question, isn't it? We've seen his courage, his compassion, his willingness to fight for his people, and his strategic thinking.
Yeah.
But we've also glimpsed his capacity for ruthlessness and his ambition.
This episode definitely leaves us with a lot to ponder about the man who would be king.
Yeah, it's almost like we're seeing this king in the making, but one forged through these trials and tribulations.
It makes you wonder how different his reign might have been.
Right.
Had he not gone through these specific challenges, would he have been as decisive?
Yeah.
As compassionate, as strategic. It's hard to say.
Right.
But what we do know is that these experiences really shaped him.
Yeah. And it's not just about the events themselves, right? It's about how David responds to them.
Right.
You know, we see his deep faith, his reliance on God's guidance, even in these darkest moments.
Absolutely.
And we see his ability to, you know, learn and adapt and grow as a leader.
Yeah. His growth is really fascinating to track.
Yeah.
Early on, he was very impulsive, even reckless at times.
Yeah. But through these trials, he develops a much greater sense of responsibility.
Oh, yeah.
A deeper understanding of the complexities of leadership.
And, you know, thinking back to the beginning of our deep dive.
Yeah.
We started with David as a shepherd.
Right.
Then a musician, a giant slayer, an outlaw.
Right.
And now a leader on the cusp of kingship.
Yeah.
What does this trajectory tell us about how the biblical writers viewed leadership?
It suggests that true leadership isn't just about charisma or military might.
Yeah.
It's about character.
Right.
About being tested and refined through adversity.
Yeah.
It's about learning to make very difficult decisions.
Right.
To balance strength with compassion.
Yes.
And to ultimately rely on something much larger than yourself.
And for us, listening to these stories thousands of years later,
right,
what can we take away from David's journey? What resonates with you the most strongly?
I think for me, it's a reminder that leadership isn't a destination.
Right.
It's a process. It's about constantly learning and adapting, striving to become the best version of ourselves.
Right.
And it's about recognizing that even our failures,
yeah,
our moments of doubt and despair, can be opportunities for growth.
That's a very powerful message.
It is.
And one that transcends any particular time or place.
Yeah.
David's story, with all of its twists and turns, its moments of brilliance and its flaws, continues to speak to us across the centuries.
It challenges us to think about our own leadership,
right,
our own values, and how we navigate the complexities of life.
Yeah.
It reminds us that even amidst this chaos and uncertainty, there's always hope for,
right,
redemption, for renewal, for becoming the leaders we were meant to be.
And on that note, we'll leave you to ponder the next chapter in David's story. What kind of king will he become? How will he rule? And what lessons can we learn from his triumphs and his failures? Keep exploring, keep questioning, and we'll see you next time for another deep dive into this fascinating world of the Bible.